This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Set to start today, right? Back by popular demand, they said, guys, I know that the MGO blog roundtable goes away, but can you please have Craig on? I mean, this is literally, I'm giving you emails, tweets, messages, just keep Craig on. So Craig was happy to oblige. Little did I know, hey, we are going to have the roundtable crew for another week. They're coming on. Actually, we have 2/3 of the crew on with us right now, a little early with Craig Ross and Seth Fisher. Guys, good morning. How are you?
Fine. You know, my email is a little different than yours, Sam. And it's why Seth and maybe Brian are going to be on, is that I got emails that said, no, would you please bring Seth Fisher and Brian Cook on? Right. I can't stand an entire hour of you. 10 minutes is more than most humans can endure.
But you're only getting messages from family on that one, Craig.
And so I sent a note to Seth and Brian, and they said, hey, yeah, well, we can do some more. There was enough stuff going on here. We don't have to talk about crazy people like Rudolf Virchow yet. And we can actually talk, you know, sort of ordinary sports. So thank you, Seth, very much.
Well, wait a minute. I thought that's what I was signing on for. When you said you want to join me on the Craig Ross Hour, I was like, sweet. Like, there's all this, like, Russian Revolution talk that I want to get into and, like, the history of the Aztecs. We're gonna talk about that. Like, that's what I've been excited, man. Like, I've been having to talk sports all year.
Sundials. We're going to learn about sundials.
That's right.
Sundials.
Well, I'm curious, and I mentioned this in the break, if Craig is ready to reverse course, to turn tail and run back to Cleveland and support the Browns, because the talk in NFL circles now is that the Browns are one of the favorites to go to the Super Bowl this year. Can you believe it? You look at the additions, you know, some of the moves they made defensively, the weaponry offensively. A lot of buzz about Cleveland might being the team next year. Craig, are you ready to give up on the Lions now?
No, I'm a Lions fan now, Sam. I mean, it's like I said, when they drafted Brandon Whedon, that was one strike. And then when they drafted Johnny Manziel, that was two more strikes. And so I just couldn't do it anymore. And I've been a Browns fan. I went to my first Browns game when I was 4 years old, when Marion Motley was the fullback for the Browns, and that's the truth. And they had Len Ford, the great Michigan player, was a defensive end for them, and Dante Gluefingers Lavelli and Lou the Toe Groza. So I go back to the Browns since I was 4 years old, but this is too much. That was too much for me. So no, I'm a Lions fan now.
You picked the Lions. So you picked the Lions.
I picked the Lions.
Like, you have a choice. You could do anything. That's like having a choice between religions and choosing ours.
Yeah. I mean, they're sort of like... It's good stuff. There's two things that strike me as salient about any draft, including this one. And they both come from Bill James. And I think you can sort of fit these homilies into almost anything in life, and particularly the pro football draft. And one is, Bill James was asking the question about whether Jose Mesa, a relief pitcher for the Indians, could pitch. And his response was, I don't know, can a bear perform brain surgery? I guess we'll never know until we hand them a scalpel and stand back. And that's what I often feel about drafts. The other one is that, and this is completely relevant, particularly to the old Cleveland Indians and to some extent the Lions and the Browns, and that is that a bearskin stuffed with hamburger is not a bear. And this is something that the Browns and the Cleveland Indians have never understood. They've always thought they could just take a bearskin, start stuffing hamburger in it, and they would end up with an actual bear. And the truth is that never worked. So I'm hoping the Lions have turned that corner and they've taken Sam Webb's advice and not drafted Justin Fields, which is probably a smart move. But let me...
You talk about being triggered. The Buckeyes were triggered by that. My men were raided by Scarlet and Gray. I mean, they were just on fire that I had the audacity to come out and say, you don't take a Buckeye quarterback, especially in the first round. Why would you? You have to seriously question whether that system prepares guys for the transition. Says nothing about them as college performers. They certainly have had their way with Michigan. I'm not taking anything away from that. I'm just saying, as a pro franchise, I'm not banking my future on that. That's exactly what the Chicago Bears did, trading a first-round pick next year to move up and take Justin Fields in a year where their head coach is coaching for his job. Like, Justin Fields has to play.
Some bad news on that front. Ryan Day, he coaches an NFL offense. And Fields is going to be a pretty good pro, I think, especially because he's in the NFL North. So, like, now he can just, you know, make me feel bad by being a good quarterback, which has always been his talent.
Ryan Day wasn't running the offense when Dwayne Haskins was the quarterback.
Dwayne Haskins did fine in that system, but I didn't think he was going to be a good NFL quarterback. I think Fields is. Fields can make all the throws. He knows what's going on all over the field. I mean, he was that offense last year. If you could take him off of Ohio State last year, they were not a vintage Ohio State team.
With all of the knock, if you take away Dwayne Haskins's his maturity issues and just talk about functionally, what's his issue on game day? They say he is a one read quarterback. He can't go through his progressions.
Yeah,
and it was uncanny how similar the takes were on Justin Fields, that he's a one read quarterback. Time and time again, they were saying that. Now maybe he overcomes that where Dwayne Haskins didn't. But here's my thing in thinking that he won't be a guy, at least not initially, at least not with this incarnation of the Bears staff. Is you had Mitch Trubisky, who is a very similar quarterback, and you couldn't tailor your offense to work for Mitch Trubisky. And now you're going to drop Justin Fields into that mix with pretty much the same talent around him. And in a season where you can't just bring him along slowly, the GM and the coach this is their job. They have got to play Justin Fields this year. And I just don't believe that they are drafting him with the idea that, oh, this is what's best for the franchise in the future. They're drafting him now for the now. And can Justin Fields be ready to do it right now at a level that'll save their job? I just don't think so.
Ira, do you need to break or can I speak to this? You need to break. So let's break.
Look at that. Look at that professionalism from Craig Ross. He knows the time markers. He knows when we need a break. He just teased his reply on the other side with the third member of the roundtable joins us. We'll have Brian Cook as well. And we will get to a MGo blog roundtable when we return here. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side, and a surprise MGo blog roundtable. The summer of Craig was set to start today, and then audible, as Craig said, hey, no, not yet. Not yet. Too much to talk about. The MGo blog roundtable crew is with us intact as Brian Cook has now joined the fold. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm okay.
All right. Craig Ross and Seth Fisher are back. They joined us in the last segment. And Craig, you teased your response about Justin Fields to the Bears.
Yeah. I mean, I know the Bears are excited about Justin Fields, but the Bears and their fans were really excited about Mitch Trubisky. And I would suggest Mitch Trubisky stinks and cannot lead a team anywhere in the NFL. And so that's, you know, the excitement for the Bears is on this is meaningless. And the other thing is that what the Lions did in their restraint, in their incredible restraint here, was take the best player, who might be the best player in the draft, or at worst, the second best player in the draft, and he's a left tackle who solidifies them into a pretty good offensive line. You now move Taylor Decker over to a better spot, and you have a good center, and so you really now are in a spot where you can build around an offensive line, and once they get a real quarterback, then you may have something going. I looked at a guy also who looked at the rest of the picks, a guy who's a really tough grader, and unlike, you know, most of the draft grades gives everybody A's, this guy gives everybody C's and D's. And I hate to reference him because he's such a jerk, but so I won't use his name, but I think he knows the NFL, and I think he does a good job grading. And he likes Levi O. He doesn't like McNeil, thinks McNeil was a complete reach. He really likes the corner who I can't, who's another name I can't pronounce.
Melifonwu?
Yeah, from Syracuse.
That was the section where the Lions were just drafting all guys that the that Michigan should have recruited better.
Yeah.
Like that was a guy, remember, because Don Brown had his brother at, was it UConn?
Yeah.
And like, so he popped up on the board, and we're like, oh, yes, please, like, go get that guy. And we were watching film, and then I think at the end, they just, you know, didn't bother. But
his brother was a third-round pick who was, like, who killed it at the combine.
Uh-huh.
And, like, he had good numbers, too, and he was big, and it was just like, all right, we're going to get this guy because this is, like, a Don Brown special. And then it never happened, and I was like, much of the draft was like specifically trolling Michigan football
fans. Yes. Yeah, you're talking about Obi Melifonwu, who was a freak. He was a physical freak. I think he was 6'4". You know, he was around 220 pounds. He ran a 4.440. He had like a 44-inch vertical. It's like insane numbers. Now they said, you know, from a football IQ standpoint, he was still learning the game. There were some football IQ things that they need to improve on, but the raw athleticism, he had it. And same thing is being said about Fatu Melifonwu, the DB out of Syracuse, is that he set some really impressive marks at the combine. Feel like you're going to have to improve some IQ things, but you're absolutely right. Man, how did that guy not wind up in Michigan? Yeah.
I don't know. And then you have Ben St. Juice going in the third round, and you're just like, oh, God. Rashad Weaver went.
Yep.
Ali McNeil. There are a lot of – it was just like, oh, God.
Yeah, Ali McNeil. I love that pick. I love the Ali McNeil pick, by the way. And that's a pick that's been, you know, panned in some circles. Not many, but some. And I just don't get it because I that's another freak athlete of a guy that Michigan, they were in on Levi Onwuzurike as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, you know, all these guys that Michigan was on, it didn't quite get, and at least we get the chance to see him with the Lions. Now, same thing with Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah. Although Michigan recruited him, I believe, fairly heavily and just didn't get him. Yeah, so Amon-Ra St. Brown in that round is a, you know, was great value, I think. He's not going to take the top off of defense, but he is a good wide receiver, and we've probably all seen him several times, and he's productive. Derek Barnes, I don't get, and Jamar Jefferson, I didn't get either until they released Kerryon Johnson today. So obviously, at that spot, getting help in your running back position makes sense because you're deep in the draft at that point. So it was a good draft, you know. Brian, what do you think of this? I mean, well, two things, two notes. One is that Cameron Cheeseman went 225. That's only 20. You know, he can say for his whole life, I went 26 picks after Tom Brady. And which in and of itself is fairly remarkable. And a lot of people are saying, why would you draft a long snapper? But Lloyd Carr told me one day, no, I'll give up. If I find a guy who can snap, I mean, he said fans don't appreciate it, but coaches appreciate it. If you've got a guy who can kill it on the snaps, I mean, that's just a major worry that coaches have. And he goes, that's worth a scholarship every day. So my guess is Cheeseman at 225 made complete sense. Michigan ends up with 8 guys drafted. Michigan State, none. And fans are saying, well, wait a minute. Those dudes beat us last year. How the heck can a team with no draft picks at all, you know, and a first-year head coach and a basically meatball team, you know, beat Michigan?
Did Vincent Gray get drafted?
No, he's still on our team, right? I think.
But when you have that kind of weakness at cornerback, as Michigan did in that game, I know Vincent Gray kind of came on a little bit later.
Yeah,
but like that, the guy who like had like 200 yards receiving against Michigan, I think he had like 2 other catches the rest of the year. So.
Yeah.
Right. For me, you know, the draft didn't make that worse, that game, that loss look any worse. I said at the time, it's on par to me with App State. So, I mean,
it's worse than App State because App State was a better team than Michigan State. You know, Appalachian State was actually a pretty good football team. They're defending national champion, I think, in their division. They actually were a really, really good team. This Michigan State team was no good at all.
Here's a question I have for you guys to ponder for a second. So we saw Ambry Thomas, who I think is going to be a steal for the San Francisco 49ers, even in the third round. That was about what I thought his ceiling was, having opted out of the season, the third round. We saw, Nico opt out, go in the third round. And then we saw some guys who opted in fall. So a guy like, for instance, Jalen Mayfield, who at one point there was some first round consideration for, he opted in, got hurt, still wasn't healthy for his pro day, didn't test great. He winds up falling to the third round. A guy like Sean Wade opts into the season, falls down draft boards. You could talk about his talent, but still falls down. Do you think that we are going to see an impact on guys moving forward? Maybe not opting out of seasons as a whole, but maybe getting late in the season and saying, maybe I don't need to play the rest of these games. You know, we aren't playing for a championship anyway. Do you see that kind of impact based on how opt-outs weren't penalized, it seemed to me, for opting out?
I don't know. I kind of feel like if Nico Collins had played another 13 college football games in a full season, he wouldn't have gone in the third round, right?
Right, but did he suffer? He didn't gain ground, but did he lose ground by opting out?
Well, and these are special circumstances too. Like if you opt out 2 years from now, every coach in the NFL is going to be like, I don't want that guy, right? Like this is a completely unique situation. I mean, if we do start seeing that, I think that makes expanding the playoff to be an even bigger imperative than it feels like right now. Like, right? Because then you got 12 teams, you've got teams chasing for 12 spots. Then there's actually like, you have relevance to your season for most of the Power Five.
I think that is spot on. I think you are spot on, Brian Cook, with that point.
So, I mean, it might be a thing. I kind of doubt it because, like, most athletes are looking to the upside and not the downside. So they're trying to, you know, there's all those guys who go to camps when they're committed just so that their recruiting ranking can get higher, right? It's like, They're always looking to move up and compete, and that's what makes them high level athletes.
What do you guys think?
If you're going to college and you're picking your college because they're going to prepare you for the NFL, right? And then you play in college and you get to a point where, you know, they're talking about you as a draft pick. You got everything to lose by playing and nothing to lose by not playing. And I think that's something that, you know, the agents are involved, and they're going to be getting to these guys and talking to them, and they're going to say, look, you know, you are now a draft pick. Now, you still have to play a little bit. You can't just, you know, sit on the bench for a year and then go based off of your recruiting talent. But once you put some film out there, Yeah, I think the guys will go to the draft, and I think it's going to hurt Michigan down the line because Michigan recruits guys who want to get drafted and want to get developed for the NFL and have the talent to play in the NFL, so we're going to be more affected by that. I think really the end game is more we've talked about this plenty with bowl games. It's just when you pay the players – or even when you sign them to contracts outside of the program, that has to include playing, right? Like if we're gonna, if they're gonna have the rights to their name and likeness, then they sign a contract to be like, you know, the sponsor of MGo Blog for this year. Then part of that contract is you're gonna have to play all your games, and that's I think the only way to keep them nowadays.
Greg?
Yeah, well, I agree with both you guys. I don't have much to add. The question I've got relating back to specifics, James Hudson. What the hell happened with James Hudson? I mean, my impression was he left Michigan because he didn't want to be an offensive lineman. Is that right? So, and then he goes to Cincinnati and he plays offensive line and he goes around the same as Jalen Mayfield at about the same spot.
So I think he, when the move initially happened, I think he moved begrudgingly to offensive line. I think the transfer, know, I think if you go back to that season, I'm trying to remember the sequence. I think it was the Michigan State game that year where Juwan Bushel-Beatty goes out with injury.
Right.
And if you remember, I think Andrew Stuber had been hurt, had been out for a while. And Andrew Stuber goes in that game after having missed a lot of time. And it was like right after that, that James Hudson wanted to transfer. I think it was that was the tipping point for him. I think he thought he should have been on the field. And when Stuber went in over him in that game, it was like, I'm out. That's how I remember it taking place. So by the time he left, I don't think it was, obviously, I mean, he didn't go to Cincinnati to play defensive line. So, I mean, if it was a position thing, you would think that he would go there and play the position that he wanted to play. It wound up being a depth chart thing and feeling like he wasn't getting the right look on the depth chart at that point in time.
Yeah, I mean, I feel sorry for people who've only been fans for 10 or 15 years because you've got 10 or 15 years of pain. You know, and I said once last year in Ann Arbor, it's always 24-12. Well, that you know, that may not be, you know, that may be true for people over, say, 70 years old, but it's not true anymore for young people. They just remember these particular nails in their hearts. And there's just one after another. So it's been hard to be a Michigan fan. And we've got 1,000 of these, stories that make no sense or are just painful.
Who do you guys think is going to be the best pro out of that bunch before we move on? I mean, all the landing spots, and just to run them down real quick, Quitty with the Colts. You had Nico with the Texans. Jalen Mayfield with the Falcons. I think he's going to start out at guard there.
He's going to be a guard.
Yeah, Ambry with the 49ers. You go down to the fifth round, I think, was the next. And then it's you got Cam McGrone with the Patriots, which is you got Bench Mason with the Ravens, of course, and Cam Cheeseman with Washington. Who am I missing, Mr. Weintraub? Am I missing anyone? I don't think so.
Yeah. I think you got it. Chris Evans. Right. Oh, Chris Evans.
Oh, yeah, Chris Evans. That's right. That's right. And they're talking about Chris Evans, you know, making some hay in the NFL as a pass catching tailback, which
Just troll us, just killing us.
you remember Ronnie Harmon? That's all I kept thinking about was Ronnie Harmon when they brought up Chris Evans.
Do you know every year for 5 years, Sam, in the season preview, I was like, this is the year that Chris Evans is gonna catch a lot of passes. And then he goes and he's like doing the NFL combine stuff. And there's the Twitter feed that's like, hey, this is where this guy ranks everywhere. And it's like, Chris Evans is the best athlete in America. And now he's going to catch like 50 passes in the NFL next year. And I'm just going to be like, why do I do this? Why am I here? Why can't I just fade away into nothing? Anyway, Nico Collins, to answer your question, Nico,
who's going to throw Nico passes next year? Isn't it?
Doesn't matter. That's the good question.
As long as it's not Shea Patterson, it'll be fine.
The guy from Stanford that they drafted, I know like, they think Sean they can
Patterson.
Work out.
I don't want any Shea Patterson smoke. Let me just say, I don't want any Shea Patterson smoke. Sean, don't call me.
This is not about the accuracy of the passes. It's about the decision whether to throw it to Nico Collins or not. This is strictly about targets.
All right. Who do you guys? So Brian is with Nico. What about you guys? Best pro out of the bunch.
I'm sort of, you know, to be honest, I think it'll be Cheeseman.
Well, longest career, yeah.
He'll have the longest career, and he'll be around the NFL for a decade at least. But yeah, I'm sort of with Nico too. I think Chris Evans has a legit shot. I'm skeptical of Quiddy Pay. I mean, Quiddy Pay is a great person, and I'm rooting for him, you know, more than anyone. But I'm skeptical of him a bit. Nico and Chris Evans seem like the right choice to me. Mayfield could, especially at guard, could hang around the NFL for a while. That's how I would see it.
Seth? I mean, I'm surprised no one thinks Quiddy's going to be that great, but one thing is I was worried about him going to one of those, going to a program that really just needs an edge rusher and was looking at him because he's, you know, he's more of kind of a push guy than a, you know, dodge around you kind of guy.
Right.
And one thing I like about this pick is that Indianapolis really does that kind of pass rush. They like to squeeze you in until there's nothing there. And that's, if he went to that team or the Ravens, I thought he was going to be fine. And, you know, that was the only team really in draft range to get him. So I think that going to that team is going to make Quiddy everything that he can be. Plus, they need him right away. They, like, absolutely needed an edge rusher on the strong side. So I think he's got the perfect fit. And I think that Ambry Thomas is also going to – I mean, everything you need, I think it's the right system for him out there. San Francisco runs, like, kind of like pattern match stuff that I think he'd be pretty excellent at. So, yeah, those are my picks.
Yeah, I'm going with Ambry Thomas as well. When you consider, I mean, his measurables are up there with the best in the draft. His lone season as a starter came on the heels of colitis, and he goes out and has a really strong season. I thought he was going to be an all Big Ten player at least had he played last year. You couldn't take him in the first or second round based on the small sample space, but to get him in the third round, the talent of that level, I think it's going to wind up being steel, steel area, steel range as far as the 49ers are concerned. All right, so we got a lot more to get into. We spent time last week on Devontae Jones, right? So no need to rehash that.
Well, I think there's some reason to a little bit of reason to talk about that again. I'm not.
Okay, so what do you want to add?
Well, just that, Ace, I think, and maybe Matt, on Brian's site, put up a little more tape of him than had been there before, or than I'd been able to find. And I wondered perhaps what Brian and Seth felt after looking at a little more information from him. I mean, I'm still just don't know, partly because the level of competition that he played against, you know, wasn't all that good. And with Mike Smith, we had at least one or two games where you could look at him against real competition. And with Jones, you just don't really have that. That's not to say he isn't going to be a good player here. But also on the MGO blog, there was some tape that I hadn't seen of Frankie Collins. And his jump shot just looked – I mean, the problems I've had with Frankie's jump shot is it looked a little stiff and – not in these tapes this summer. All of a sudden, his release was much more relaxed, much looser. And I thought, whoa, maybe this guy, you know, if he can play. Now, I think Jones will play defense. And that isn't a likely issue. And I have no idea if Frankie can play any defense right away or how long that's going to take. But from those tapes, I reevaluated Frankie up a bit, and with Jones, I was sort of, well, I still don't know.
So how does that change your outlook for the point guard position next year? Do you think that they are gonna they're more likely to start Frankie now as a result of your enhanced film review?
I think so. I think it's it depends on defense, but I think I think that's plausible. And so I don't, but I don't know. I wondered what you guys thought after looking at that, whether that made you reevaluate or not, or is it still likely that it's going to be Jones and then we'll work Frankie in as it comes along? It may be just too soon to tell, but
I mean, I love Frankie.
Me too.
The thing that Jones brings is he's been in college for 4 years. And Frankie didn't really get much of a senior year. Like, he was kind of barnstorming with his fake AAU team going around places. And then, you know, he had a shooting guard on his team who just opted out halfway through the season. So he,
right,
the way he looked sort of in the games without that guy, like, there was just too much on his shoulders. So he's taking those outside shots that aren't really his thing. I'm not a guy who can evaluate a release and think, ooh, that's good or ooh, that's bad. But one thing I will say is that Frankie does play defense. Now it's kind of hard to judge it in the AAU ball that, you know, it's pretty helter skelter. But when he gets one on one with a guy, he's got great lateral quickness. He can stay in front. He's very cagey about steals, so he's good at anticipating skip passes, and he's got much more range than you'd expect because he's such a big leaper. So I think that he's going to at least be an adequate defender early, but whenever you have a guy, whenever you're making a point guard choice between a senior who's in his fifth year and a true freshman, the senior is going to get the nod at least early. And then maybe Frankie's able to push through midseason if, one, Jones disappoints a little bit, and if, two, like, he comes in and is just a revelation. But, you know, I think more realistically, he's going to be a guy who gets 15 to 20 minutes.
100% agree. Seth?
Yeah, one thing Ace noticed about Jones that I don't think we talked about before is his defensive rebounding, which normally is not something you really bring up with a point guard, especially when he's been playing in the Sun Belt. But then he showed the tape on it, and he does have a kind of a weird knack for picking out where the ball is going to go on Karooms and using that to start. So it doesn't always work for him, but he's always kind of running in a different direction than someone else after a three-pointer goes up, trying to get those. And he's got those like little bits of his game that don't really show up except for, you know, all of a sudden there's a breakout or there's a or he drew a foul because that he's just, it's so crafty. Like, the guy just, he knows all these little things about basketball.
Yeah, I think Brian's point, I feel like this is an Occam's razor moment. You know, like, really the simplest thing, he's a senior point guard. He's a senior point guard that even at a lower level has been through the rigors. And so it's going to give you a steadying presence out on the court. Frankie would have to come in and just be lights out in order to unseat him. Also, to Brian's point. But absent that, you at least have a guy that you can lean on that you know is a heady guy from all of his coaches. Andrew Kahn did a great piece where he talked to some coaches and said, you know, he sees the court so well. He's a crafty guy. He's never rattled, never flustered. Just always under control on the court. He doesn't have to be more than that because you aren't expecting him to come in and be, you know, a guy. He has to just come in and run the team and help bring Frankie along. His role is different than Mike Smith's. And while Mike Smith wasn't necessarily, you know, the guy, I think he had to be more of a guy than Devontae Jones is going to have to be for this team.
Well, so one thing that I didn't realize last week is that he really changed his role for Coastal Carolina this year. So before, he had assist rate that really looked like a point guard, and this year he was much more of a shot absorber than a generator. And so I was a little bit skeptical of the fit, but if you go back and you look at his junior year or sophomore year film, I guess, he's very much in the mold of a guy who's able to get halfway in the lane and then pick out the right guy. So, and that's going to be important for Michigan because, you know, being able to collapse the defense when you've got Caleb Houston standing on the wing is a very good thing. Being able to get into the lane when you've got Hunter Dickinson and Musa Diabate is a very good thing. And, you know, I think everybody appreciates Eli Brooks, but Brooks has never been the guy who's going to unbalance the defense. He's going to be the guy who is able to get you into your stuff and maybe take some opportunistic shots. And he's not crafty in the way that Jones is, and he's not a little flash of lightning like Frankie Collins is. So getting that ability to unbalance the defense is something that's really important. And now Michigan has two different ways to get it, which I think is important because, you know, if there's a matchup where Jones has a guy who's quick enough to stay in front of him and he can't really do anything with it, then maybe you can go with Frankie or vice versa. So the flexibility he provides is also really important.
Yeah. One thing, Brian, is you're right. But they changed his role. His freshman and sophomore year, he was strictly a point. And then last year, he became a two guard because they had another guy they used at the point.
Yeah, so, they had a lot. I mean, they had all point guards. That whole team was all like 5'11 dudes. So, like, you know, they had to have somebody being the point because they had a guy who couldn't shoot. And so, they were asking Jones to draw a lot of fouls to get in the lane. And I don't know how much that translates. I do want to say that, like, I think that the role for Frankie was going to be the same either way. And I think the question was more whether we're going to have Eli playing a lot more point guard or if we're going to bring in another graduate transfer so Eli can go and play his role. And I think that's where you're really going to, you know, Eli can go in back and be who Eli is without having to play point guard all the time unless, you know, Collins can't play at all. But I don't think the plan was ever like, let's go into this year with a freshman point guard and just roll on it, right?
All right, so we need to get a break in here. Okay. I know a question that Craig wants to get into is, you know, adjusted outlook for the Big Ten in light of the move. So think about that over the break. And then also, Strauss Mann, guys. I mean, you know, lost in all of our discussion, you know, in local sports about the draft and Franz moving on and Devontae Jones coming in. Strauss Mann leaving Michigan hockey, at least to me from the outside, was a surprise. Talking to Mike Spath this morning, it makes it sound like it was a surprise inside. Curious what you guys think of that move and your adjusted outlook for Michigan hockey in light of Strauss Mann's departure. We'll get into that on the other side as well here on the Michigan Insider. MGo Blog Roundtable, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, The Ticket.
Yeah. Can we talk about... can we talk just a bit about Imani Bates, too?
Mm-hmm.
Because I went back and looked at Chris Solari's articles, and he wrote that Bates would be a two-year player at MSU because of his, quote, strong feelings for MSU and Tom Izzo. And there wasn't a single other human who covers Big Ten basketball who thought he would ever show up there. Forget about being a two-year player. A player. Yeah. What's wrong with Solari? He's like a brain damaged vulture, so I don't, you know, I don't get it.
That was ridiculous.
Hey Seth.
Yeah.
It's Karam.
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 Karam. Yeah. Karam. Not Karam. Yeah. So Karam. I wouldn't do that on air, but
I do that a lot. My interactions with the English language are 90% written words. So
yes, I'm speaking from a place where I come from. I am one of these people as well, where I say a word and I'm like, everybody looks at me like, what? It's just good to get that.
Yep.
Out there sometime.
All right.
It's a good point, though. The guy really is a good defensive rebounder. He really seems to be unusual in that respect. And that's something that Michigan has had, you know, defensive rebounders off the point.
I think Beilein did it by design. I think the idea was he didn't have the centers to really go up and get it, so he just had the forwards box out as much as they could, put those guys under the basket, and let the guards collect it. And, you know, Derek Walton was really good at it.
Derek Walton is the best defensive rebounding guard I've ever seen in the Big Ten.
Right, but Derek Walton also could get up. Like, we have that one photo of him jumping over, was it Sullivan? He had some ups.
D-Walt was, I think it was more anticipated because D-Walt, I remember being at a warm-up, mm-hmm. and man, he was trying to dunk. I'm sorry, D-Walt, I shouldn't say that. There's a guy who's never dunked at all. I can only dream about dunking. It got to a point where...
Aren't you like 5'4"? I don't... Why would anyone expect you to dunk?
Hey, man, Spud Webb
can dunk. Come to the house. We have an 8-foot hoop, man. You can dunk.
Spud Webb can dunk. But, you know, it's one thing to talk about guys who can't do it when you can't do it yourself. But, hey, X, when I'm taking the ball, I said, man, come on. And X just goes up and just off 1 foot. As if to say, because they kept trying to throw D-Watt. They were trying to throw him alleys to try to help him. He was, just wasn't, not his forte. But great, he was physical and great anticipation from D-Watt that made him, I agree with Craig, one of the better defensive rebounding guards you'll see. So, yeah. Hey, he took an inch from me, Sheldon. He took an inch from me. I'm 5'5". He took an inch. You can't be stealing inches.
That's pretty close, right? Like
stealing inches, man. You're supposed to lie up, not lie down.
All right, all right. You're 5'11".
Back at about 20, guys.
Like on the program in Flint Central. Sam Webb, 5'8", 150. I was like, hell yeah, give me that. That was on the JV roster. By the time he got to the varsity roster, it was 5'9", 175. I was like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
All right, guys, we're coming back on radio. Stand by. I'll catch you in.
Yeah, you lie up.
We'll give to the lead to the 5'8" Sam Webb in 5'4"3.
Hey, man, if you look at the NFL draft preview, Sam Webb was listed in there as 6'2", 185. I'm just saying. Seriously.
That's a different Sam Webb.
It is a different Sam Webb.
Straight facts. He was a Division II defensive back, and now he's a radio host. But it's a fact.
Exactly.
He
got
drafted, and I don't think he got picked up as an undrafted free agent yet either. I'll have to dig into that one for you, Sam.
Yeah. So as we switch gears, or before we switch gears, your adjusted outlook in the Big Ten based on the comings and goings, the moving and the shaking. I mean, a lot of people think highly of the Devontae Jones pickup for Michigan, boosting the view of them. What do you think of Michigan standing in the Big Ten in light of all of these moves?
Well, if you look at the fantasy stats, Bart Torvik has Michigan the number 2 team in the country, and then they got Purdue, Ohio State, Maryland, and Michigan State 9 through 15. So they're a pretty clear favorite by that reckoning, and I think that they're a pretty clear favorite overall. So I think it's going to be more of a down year for the Big Ten. You know, you got Wisconsin, Iowa, Rutgers taking big steps back. You have a year zero at Minnesota and Penn State. They're probably going to be terrible. Illinois is going to take a big step back. You know, I think you might get some movement upward from Nebraska and Indiana and Maryland, I think, has done really good work in the transfer portal, especially getting Kudus Wahab. And then you have Ohio State and Purdue, which are going to be pretty much the same teams they were last year, except they're returning almost all of their minutes. So, you know, but Purdue is going to be limited, right? Ohio State is going to be limited because of who they're playing at center, and Purdue in particular just lacks shooting. So I don't think Michigan's going to lack shooting, and they've got the best center in the league. So I think they're going to be the preseason favorites.
Yeah, I more or less agree with that. I mean, I'm just struck by the fact that Michigan loses an entire team that would compete for a Big Ten championship as a starting five. I mean, Livers, Wagner, Sean D, Mike Smith, and Austin Davis. If that was your starting five, you'd say, hey, that's formidable. They could, you know, they might do it. And to absorb that is quite a bit, especially when you're looking at a lot of freshmen filling in. And freshmen, I mean, you saw with the kid at Illinois, I mean, this year, Adam Miller. I mean, I looked at him in high school and I said, wow, this kid is just going to be a great basketball player.
Well, where did he wind up? Was it Alabama? Where did he go?
LSU.
LSU. Where else?
He wants to play point guard.
but he wasn't a great player at Illinois this year. He was good at times. And so I just am always reticent to say, oh yeah, this freshman's going to step right in and do X, Y, Z, because often they just don't. It takes a while to adjust into their ability. But I look at the Big Ten and almost every team looks like they've got problems to overcome in relation to this past year. and even Maryland. Now, maybe Maryland not, but all three of Maryland's wings are in the portal. Now, whether they stay in the portal is a question, but Morsell, Wiggins, and who's the Ayala are all right now in the portal. Now, there's noises they'll come back. Maybe Ira has more of an instinct on this than I do. But, yeah, they solved their point guard problem with Fats from Rhode Island and their center problem that they had last year. But now they maybe have no wings.
So, I'm curious, guys, what you think. Because to me, the biggest
I don't know how they changed coaches, Craig.
Ira, not only did they not change coaches, I think I read that they extended his contract
to replace DeAndre Haynes, who went to Marquette. I'm expecting one or two of those wings to come back, but probably not all three.
To me, Ohio State is maybe the most intriguing. I think Dwayne Washington, as I said before, if he comes back, I think he's in contention for player of the year. But here's an interesting one. What did you guys make of the rumors of EJ Liddell looking to transfer to Illinois? What did you do? You lent any credence to that? His dad came out and was like, no, he was on campus, but he had his Ohio State hat on and he's not looking to transfer. Any of that, none of that is true, even though in Illinois circles, we know they can be in their own reality, but they had some reports out there that there was some serious smoke out there. I wonder if you guys lent any credence to it.
I'm not an expert on either of these teams' inner workings as basketball, but I find it hard to believe that EJ Liddell would transfer away from a sure starting role on a team that projects to be a lot better than Illinois. Like, it's not like he needs minutes, right? And it's not like Illinois with EJ Liddell is going to be much more than Curbelo and EJ Liddell, right?
And Brad Underwood's a good coach, but I don't think he's got a reputation of being a fun coach. Like, it's not like, you know, hey man, I gotta go play for Brad Underwood. Like that, I don't.
That's exactly. I mean, you guys are exactly right. I don't see this. I mean, has there ever been a more delusional fan base than Illinois? I think not. And I mean, we all have our issues as fans, but they just seem to have more of them. And so I don't see that happening at all. Ohio State is losing Diallo, who is a backup there, and Musa Diallo, he's gone. CJ Walker, I believe, is gone. They bring in Jamari Wheeler from Penn State, because Penn State, I think, 8 of their 13 guys transferred. And so they have that. They still have Aarons, Kyle Young, I think Seth Towns. They brought in Joey Brunk for what that is worth from Indiana. And so they still have Key and Suing. So, yeah, they're probably a good team. But it isn't clear whether without Dwayne Washington and without Liddell, that's not the same team at all.
I don't think it's expected either of those guys won't be at Ohio State next year.
They're both in the portal and right now or NBA watch. So it's certainly uncertain.
So I not to forward the delusion of Illinois, but just to pass along what the logic was that and this was reported in the Champaign or Urbana Gazette, I think is the News Gazette. Excuse me. Yeah. Champaign Urbana News Gazette. And so their claim is that E.J. Liddell and his family have engaged in serious discussions with Illinois because E.J. does not want to be a center, that he wants to play the forward position and that he would have more of an opportunity to do that going to Illinois. That's what they say. Now, again,
these
people are delusional, but.
Yeah, they are delusional. But on the other hand, that's not irrational. And you do have a good point guard there, a very good point guard in Curbelo. They brought that big center in who was remarkably unproductive last year. I can't think of his name right now.
Omar Payne. He was Castleton's backup at Florida.
Yeah, Castleton beat him out, right. I guess it's not impossible. I sort of doubt it. I sort of doubt that it's happening, but who knows?
Just to be clear, the two Ohio State players are not in the transfer portal. I think they did enter their names into the draft, but neither is in the spot where they're likely to actually stay in the draft.
Okay.
So they should be back.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So Ohio State then is the team next year you can look at and say, okay, and you bring, they lose CJ Walker, but they bring in Jamari Wheeler. Maybe that's sort
Wheeler's not a point guard though. So their issue is like, can Dwayne Washington be a full-time point guard for them? Cause there's really nobody else on the roster who's even vaguely shaped like a point guard.
We're back to the issue of whether Jose Mesa can pitch or not.
Well, I mean, they brought in Michi Johnson, and maybe he'll be able to do it. But he was like, he came in mid-year last year, and he was supposed to be like a high school, you know, senior, and so he played very sparingly. So they're either relying on him to kind of step into a starting role or at least be a contributor, because nobody else on the roster has even a shot, really. I mean, they brought in a freshman who's top 50 called Malachi Branham, but I think he's more of a shooting guard.
Yeah, he's a top guy. He's like in the top 40, but he's a two. He's strictly a two. He's not a point guard at all.
Right. So like they have some roster construction issues, even though they probably have the second most talented roster in the Big Ten. I mean, the only, I think, competitor for there is probably Purdue.
Yeah, now is Travion Williams back at Purdue? Because
yes,
that was unclear to me whether he, because
he's not going to transfer and he has no NBA interest because he's Travion Williams, so he'll be back.
Right. You know, it's funny. We try to make some sense, right, of the moves that guys, just why would Ohio State, they got Joey Brunk now. I mean, you got some size in there that could conceivably have him play.
Joey Brunk is not size. I know he's 6'11", but he is not size.
Okay, well.
When he transferred to Indiana, we were like staring at his KenPom numbers because it's just it blows your mind that a guy his size would have like guard numbers.
Well, his stats at Butler were pretty remarkable because when he was on the floor playing center, Butler's two-point defense got 10 points worse.
So, yeah. But if you're trying to appease sure. If this is an issue for E.J. Liddell,
I mean, just
say, hey, we got Joey Brunk. Now, I'm not saying that there's any – I don't know that there's anything to this. This is like the Illinois fans are in their own world, and is the Illinois media. But, you know, guys make strange decisions, and I want to get this in before we get out of here. I just – it make sense of Straussman's decision for me, Brian. I mean, did you see it coming? Had you heard that it was on the horizon?
I mean, I hadn't heard anything coming. He has had – 3 very strong years at Michigan. So I know, I forget which athletic guy, it might have been Wheeler or it might have been Pronman, had a midseason list of the most interesting UFA college players, and Strauss was 4th or 5th on that list. I am a little surprised that he decided to go. The good thing is that Michigan brought in Eric Portillo a year ago. I think it's Portillo, actually. Mm-hmm. He's not. Yeah. He's not Hispanic. he's from Sweden.
That's never happened before on an MGo blog podcast.
So Eric Portillo was a 3rd-round pick even before he got to Michigan, got sparing games because Strauss Mann was here. Should be able to step in and perform at least adequately and probably well. So, you know, as hits to the program go, this one is extremely survivable. But, you know, Mann was an established high level goaltender, and it is a little bit of a blow.
And a captain.
Yeah, and a captain.
I mean, it's Tom Brady going to the NFL, and you still have Drew Henson. Like, Portillo is like a 5-star, and I wonder if maybe some of the conversations with him were like, you know, don't worry, Strauss is going to be gone after a few years. Because, I mean, it doesn't make sense why Portillo joined if he was going to sit on the bench for all but 1 year, right?
Well, he would have had his upper class years as the clear starter here because Mann only had 1 more year. Mm-hmm. But I think asking a 3rd-round pick to get about 10 or 15 games over the course of 2 years is a tall ask. So, you know, I think it was probably one or the other was going to be somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean,
you're thinking that this is a situation where they went to Strauss and said, you're still the guy, but less of the guy. You're going to, you know, Portillo's going to get more games next year.
I mean, that's one possibility. I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like if Mann got approached by NHL teams and they're like, we're going to sign you to this contract and maybe you'll have less leverage next year when you can't go back to school, you better strike while the iron's hot. I think that's something that might have moved the needle as well.
Also, the Michigan lost one of their assistant coaches. I think it was the goalie coach. So,
who, yes, Chris Mayotte became the head coach at Colorado College, so that might have played a factor in his decision as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I talked to several people who are hockey people, including one who works for minor league team, who you guys know. And I asked about Mann, and he said the problem with Mann is the NHL doesn't like shorter goaltenders, regardless of how good they are. Now, Mann isn't, I mean, Mann is about 6 feet, 5'11", 6 feet tall. And I thought, well, the guy has been so productive and so good at Michigan, it's hard for me to believe the NHL wouldn't be interested. But he says, you know, it's a hard sell. And so this becomes more curious to me.
It's a hard sell in the draft. But, like, if you go look at all of the – because I know someone who works for minor league hockey, a different person. She does our book every year. Anyway, she works for the Griffins, and she's like, they're always out looking for goalies to sign. Because, like, the level of goalie is either, you know, a super hot guy who's got all this talent that you're developing but, you know, gives up five goals a game, or, you know, whoever you can sign, some local, whatever. They don't have, because teams don't want to draft goalies because it takes so long to develop them and you never know who's going to hit. So, like, in the draft, I think you're absolutely right. But I think a guy like Strauss Mann, who can, you know, give you some stability and might, you know, project a guy that you can play as your second goalie, like, and a dude that you don't have to waste a draft pick on, like, they have plenty of spots for goalies in the minors.
Yeah, the NHL might not love goalies who aren't super big these days, but when all he costs you is a roster spot and a two-way contract, it's a pretty easy decision for an NHL team to go get a guy who's had been as productive as Mann, because not only was he productive at Michigan, but he had back-to-back 930 years in the USHL. So that's a like a 4.5 year period where he looks like a quality goalie. So
you expect him on a professional team next year and not, I mean, yeah, at Colorado College, say.
No, I mean, he's going to sign. Like, he's going to be in the AHL, probably start in the AHL next year.
Okay.
Interesting stuff. A historical question on the way out. It's a what if, but it struck me listening to Desmond talk about it yesterday, Craig. I know this one is right in your wheelhouse. If Derek Alexander doesn't get hurt, you know, the talk was the similarities between Desmond and Devontae, you know, Devontae Smith and the Heisman seasons. So, you know, Desmond's was equally gaudy for his time. Both were 15.9 yards per catch. You know, Devontae Smith was 22 touchdowns. Desmond was 19 receiving. They both had some returns in the touchdowns in the return game, touchdowns rushing. Both had significant injuries to receiver compadres. Now, Bama is Bama. They were able to overcome it. Michigan, DA goes out. Desmond wins the Heisman, but they lose to Florida State that year in a game that was closer than the final score.
Yeah.
And then they lose to Washington in the Rose Bowl. And Desmond's point is, man, with DA out, you know, all the focus is on Desmond. Now, he still wins the Heisman, but if DA is out there and they can't put as much attention on Desmond Howard, that people don't know what that season would have been like if DA was there. I'm curious if you agree with that.
I would agree completely. Derek Alexander was a really, really good receiver. Many Michigan fans may not know this or recall, but the guy could play. And with Desmond and Derek out there, it was a completely different team. And yeah, I think they had a legit shot of beating Florida State and Washington that year with Derek Alexander, yes. The game with Florida State was closer than people think. My recall is, like, the second play of the game was a pick six by Terrell Buckley that he jumped, he jumped a pattern that I think even if Alexander's on the field would have been a lot more difficult for them to do because they had safety help over the top of Desmond that otherwise I think might not have been there. And at halftime, I think the game was still like 31-30 or something like that.
31-23 at halftime. And it was, remember, Michigan was going, they had a turnover.
Okay.
I believe it was a turnover in the end zone that wound up making that an 8-point game at halftime as opposed to a 1-point game at halftime.
Right. Okay. Maybe that was right. Yeah. So he's not just blowing smoke on that one.
I mean, we had to go with Yael Van Dine as his replacement. That was, it wasn't just losing DA. It was like, you know, Van Dine, God love him, but he, you know, he was like a tight end in the wrong body. Like, that was not a not a scary receiver. The thing is, like, how much was Michigan gonna pass? Like, that, those are close games. I could see them winning the FSU game because that game kind of, you know, got out of hand at the end. But we did the podcast with those guys. We had Ty Wheatley on there, who kind of represented the freshmen, and Eric Anderson representing, like, the seniors. And both of them were like, no, as soon as we got on the field with Washington, we were like, okay, this is the first good team we played. Like, these guys are good. So I don't know if they win that Rose Bowl. That was an incredible Washington team.
They were a good team.
Yeah, they still lose it, but that was such a dominating affair. And I just remember Desmond being smothered in that game and just feeling like, this is maybe the first game where you really missed, where you're like, oh my God, they can't do anything without DA out there. So Eric Tolbert is right. They were loaded on steroids. Eric,
that was a rumor.
Eric, I cost Michigan John Morant. Tolbert just chimed in with a comment that was so good that we actually put it on the screen. We won't hold it against him that he cost Michigan John Morant. But I knew that was up your right in your wheelhouse there, Craig. We are out of time. I appreciate you guys indulging us for another week. And I'll just leave it open. Leave open the possibility
for another blog roundtable. We won't stop until we have one of these that's just the three of us staring at each other, not saying anything.
Sounds like a plan. Sounds like a plan. To the rest of you, we'll see you tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor Cumulus Station.
They need to be at the top.
And aren't you just so happy you jumped on the Lions bandwagon when you did? Perfect timing, Craig. Just
as opposed to jumping on the Lions bandwagon at any time in the last 60 years.
All right, we're going live in about 30 seconds.
I'm a Lions fan now.